Change of zone, number 1852, Canal Corcoran LLC.
This is an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an MRRPC, Medium Density Residential District Residential Plan Community, to amend change of zone, number 1359, ordinance 1279, for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, containing 65.125 acres more or less. The property is lying on the northeast side of Canal Crossing Road between Hebron Road and Church Street. The 911 address is not available. The tax parcels are District 334, Map 13, parcels 363, 63.01, and 363.02, and tax parcels District 334, Map 13, parcels 1298 through 1414, and parcel 334, Map 13, parcel 1447. Staff would note for the record an exhibit booklet, a site plan, and a staff analysis, and I believe we also have the results of a DELBOT service level evaluation and comments from the Sussex Conservation District, and we have a letter from the former board president, Richard Pengotta. He's writing this letter in support of the zoning changes for the above reference application. Few homeowners realize the covenants, conditions, easements, and restrictions for Cal Corcoran include unrestricted lots. The proposed changes would afford our community several important benefits. The unrestricted lots would now become incorporated in community and subject to the Canal Corcoran restrictions. And unrestricted lots would have no control of how the land would be used on what structures may be built. And becoming incorporated into community, Canal Corcoran would see a financial benefit as these new lots would participate in our quarterly assessment and contribute to the long-term reserves. And then the community is well respected and it contributes to the overall reputation of Rehoboth Beach, and they feel supporting these changes would be an improvement and enhancement to the community. And that's all I have.
All right, we thank you. Mr. Hutt.
Good evening, for the record, and welcome, Ms. Wingate. My name is David Hutt. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown with the law firm of Morris, James, Wilson, Howard, and Byard. As Mr. Fuquay did, congratulations to the commission, all the various commission members for their new positions or return to old positions. With me tonight is Ring Lardner with Davis, Bone, and Friedel, and one of the principals of Canal Corcoran LLC, the applicant, is Bill Lingo, who Mr. Fuquay pointed out during his presentation. Tonight's application has to be designated as a change of zone application, although that is somewhat of a misnomer. Ms. Cornwell and I had that discussion previously, and that is technically what it is, but this is, it's not changing from MRRPC to some other zoning classification. It will still be MRRPC at the end of the day. It is presently and will be, and hopefully with six additional lots. In its simplest form, what tonight's application is much closer to being a request to amend a condition of an RPC. The original RPC for this was approved in 1998, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but in its shortest form, there are two existing lots along Thompson Court in the Canal Corcoran subdivision, lots 21 and 22, and the request tonight is to further subdivide those into eight lots, which means there's a net gain of six because there's two existing, which would become eight. What is on the screen is the surrounding communities map that's also in the exhibit notebook that was referenced a moment ago by Ms. Cornwell. While I think everyone's familiar with the location of the Canal Corcoran subdivision, which is where the cursor is right now on the screen, the location of the property that is the subject of this is where the cursor is now. It's the triangular shaped piece of property, and what's shown there is the proposed eight lots rather than two lots, which currently is what is approved. If you go across, right next to the Canal Corcoran subdivision is, of course, the Lewis Rehoboth Canal. On the opposite side of the canal is the Henlopen Acres, the town of Henlopen Acres. Moving to the same side of the canal, right behind the Canal Corporate community, as you can see there, is Canal Point. And Then, of course, there's other communities that are in the area. You can see Sandalwood, if you're going down Hebron Road, you can see Sandalwood, as well as all the other communities. As you turn your way back towards the city of Rehoboth Beach, the application this evening relates to the lots at the, again, in that triangular area, which are lots 21 and 22. Lot 21 is 1.3 acres and lot 22 is 7 acres. And one question that you might ask is why were these, if you look at the rest of the lots, particularly the single family lots in the Canal Corcoran subdivision, is why were these larger parcels or larger tracts left in this MRRPC community? And the reason for that was that members of the developer, members of Canal Corcoran LLC, had considered using these as personal properties to have farmettes, retreats, compounds back in that area. And they have since, they no longer have that desire. And so this affords, as was indicated in the letter from the prior president of the Canal Corcoran Homeowners Association, this affords an opportunity to fully incorporate these properties into the Canal Corcoran community itself more fully. And actually, they'll have obviously dues-paying lots that are within the community here.
Can I just ask a question? I have to clarify. I'm sorry if I jump ahead, because that letter pointed out something that I didn't realize. So those two lots actually aren't governed by the restrictions right now, so that this would bring them into the overall Canal Corcoran development scheme?
They're not fully governed like every other lot.
Okay. Sorry if I messed up your...
Well, you just took it out of sequence.
Well, sorry. Well, you started talking about it, and that letter threw me off because I didn't see that in the book, and I just wanted to...
You interrupted the cadence, you know, kind
yeah,
of
yeah, right.
Kind of like an objection in the... right. In the
I was not trying to throw Mr. Hutt off his game here.
It was a strategic objection.
It's good to know that works with Mr. Hutt, though, for future reference if I'm in court with him.
All right, let's carry on.
Yeah, sorry.
When the exhibit notebooks were turned in, there was, I think, some consternation that for an additional six lots, there was an exhibit notebook of that width. And I'll blame Mr. Lardner for that. But the reason for that is to simply, there's all of the typical zoning maps that you would see showing the zoning for the surrounding areas, the surrounding communities map. There are the response to the 99C requirements. There is all of the typical things that you would see and anticipate for essentially a full subdivision. I don't intend to go through those tonight. This is Canal Corcoran has been in existence since 1998 when it was approved. There are obviously streets and roads that access the community. It has an entrance. It has utilities. The two lots that are there have the same access. The proposed six additional lots would use the same access, the same streets. And have the same utilities, sewer from Sussex County, water from the city of Rehoboth Beach. None of those things change about these lots, and so the ordinance that was adopted originally for this in 1998 stands in place for those. And I think that actually shows one of the stronger points of this application. In your exhibit notebook at Exhibit 7, is a copy of Ordinance Number 1279 that was adopted on December 22nd, 1998. And if you look through that ordinance, what you will see is that on page 3, paragraph 6 states that the maximum number of units for the project shall not exceed 177 units, with no more than 52 condominium units, 26 duplex units, or 99 single-family units. Then it does a comparison of some of the zoning classifications for that. What was ultimately approved through the site plan process that the MRRPC went through is the very next exhibit, which is Exhibit 8 in your notebook. And if you were to look at the data column on Exhibit 8, you would see, and again, it's very hard to see because the print is small, but what you would see is that The total number of units as it was, as the site plan was approved, was for 164 units. And so the original approval from Sussex County approved 177 units. If you turn the page on the ordinance to page 4, at the very bottom of the page in section C4, you will see that it is stated that it would be developed at a density of approximately 2.76 units to an acre. Through the site plan process, as the design was tweaked, as I mentioned a moment ago, there was 164 units, and that results in a density of 2.51 units per acre. With the addition of the proposed 6 lots that are part of tonight's application, the number of units would go to 170, which is still 7 less than what was approved in 1998, and the density would be 2.61, which is a tenth more unit per acre than presently exists with the 164, but still another tenth below what was actually approved in 1998. So the, as you know, you just had another MR application just that preceded this one. The density that's allowed in that zoning district is 4 units to an acre, which as it was originally approved, it was well below that. As it has been developed through the site plan process, it was further below that, and this would still be almost a unit and a half below the maximum density that would be allowed in an MR zoning classification. One of the, Ms. Cornwell, if we could move to the site plan. This shows the 8 lots as they would be proposed to lay out. When Ms. Cornwell read into the record the number of tax parcels that are affected by this, which was sort of a lot of tax parcels for just 2 lots being amended, it's because when you abandon the existing cul-de-sac, the adjacent lots pick up little pieces of land that would be dedicated to those lot owners. And so there's the curvature from each of those that goes to an adjacent lot owner. The common area for the community picks up a little corner as well. And those are all the different tax parcels that were referenced in the application. As you can see, the lots are similar in size and nature to the other lots for both this community as well as the surrounding and adjacent communities, and in fact a couple of these lots are substantially larger, and that is because they simply extend to the boundaries of the property. Part of tonight's request is for a waiver of the 20-foot forested buffer requirement, and the basis for this request is that, as you can see, the wooded areas that are shown there, that it comes close to duplicating the actual wetlands that are also on the property. And so those areas cannot be disturbed. So nature has provided a buffer already. And as you can see, when you look to the left of the area that shows the trees and the buildable envelope for each lot, you'll see that the rest of the community has a 30-foot tract of land behind all of those units. And the reason that that was not extended through this is because the Homeowners Association does not currently have responsibility of those lands. The area that you see there with the trees shown on it is the sort of the top half of that would be the 7-acre piece, and the bottom half would be the bottom portion of it would be the 1.3-acre piece. As was indicated, they weren't fully integrated into the community. So rather than add new common area to the community for the community to have to undertake and maintain, this means that those areas just stay within the lot. They can't be used for building purposes because they are wetlands. And so while there would not be the same buffer line extended beyond those lots, it would mean the association doesn't pick up any additional responsibilities for those. And those could be marked in some way if The commission thought that was important to help show those areas to property owners. Although, as they go through the site plan approval process and then as they have their building plans, those things would all be noted on surveys as to areas where they could and couldn't construct improvements. In addition, Ms. Cormo, if you could move to the other slide. This slide shows the surrounding area, of course, without the overlay of all the various tax parcels and all the community's names and such cluttering the picture. And when you look at that, you can see that there is actually subdivision that's adjacent to this also has a large wooded portion that abuts this. So that combined with the wetland portion of these lots would establish a buffer that can't be developed or otherwise used for any other purpose. As part of tonight's presentation, I'm going to hand to Ms. Cornwell some proposed findings of fact and conditions of approval. And in those, as I stated at the outset, with this application being much closer to being akin to a change of or modification of a condition, you'll see that the one of those is a section from ordinance number 1279, the paragraph that I read from, which simply modifies the number of units that was approved. And again, as is indicated there, it actually decreases the number of units from what was approved in 1998 as 177 units to 170 units, and then adjusts the segregation of those into condominium units and townhome units. And the increase comes in the single-family lots. What was approved was 99, and what's proposed is now 105 with the six additional lots. One other important note, and I mentioned it at the outset, was the Property Owners Association and their involvement in this process. Here tonight in the audience and prepared to speak on this is the current president of the Canal Corcoran's Homeowners Association. And in your exhibit notebook, there was a letter regarding the approval process and the meetings that the developer had with the community, the vote taken by the community regarding the approval of adding these six lots and technically eight lots into the Canal Corcoran Property Owners Association. And so with the combination of the letter that was submitted by the former president, you know, have the current president and the former president helping to establish the support of the community for adding these six additional lots into the community. And one of the conditions in what was just handed out is that the six additional lots, which is actually all eight of them, will be subjected to the declaration of covenants, conditions, easements, and restrictions for the Canal Corcoran community, which will fully integrate them into the community and allow them to be contributing financially and in other ways to the Property Owners Association. That is all of the presentation that I have. Obviously, Mr. Lingo is here to answer any questions you may have. And with respect to any site details of the project itself, of course, Mr. Lardner is here to answer any engineering questions that the commission may have.
All right, so we thank you. We'll see if there anyone on the commission has any questions for you, and we'll start with Mr. Hudson.
Yes, sir. The 20-foot buffer waiver that you're asking for on this, the wetlands, go back, and how far did you say that buffer's already there, the wetland would be, before it goes to the next lot over, like to the back there, the next community over? How far deep did you say that was anyway?
At its narrowest point, it's approximately 30 feet deep. It's all
okay.
Well, are you talking about in the adjacent community?
Yes.
In the adjacent community, I don't know, Mr. Larner, did you?
It looks pretty wide.
Dimension on the.
For the record, Ring Larner, Davis Bonfordell. I do not know the exact dimension of that. I believe that's also a 30-foot forested buffer off Canal Point. and then closest point. So with our 30 feet and then the 30 feet adjacent, you're probably a good 50, 60 feet combined preserved area.
Okay, and then the only other thing I have is that the cul-de-sac that's there now, will that just kind of be moved and back further and go?
Yes, sir. So the portion of the cul-de-sac that's not needed will be removed in this place, and we'll extend that back, and you see the new cul-de-sac location.
That's all I have. Thanks.
All right, sir. Ms. Hoy Stevenson.
What are the front yard setbacks and rear yard setbacks in Canal Corcoran? And do you need to include the wetlands in these lots for those for them to be able to build houses on these lots?
The front yard setback matches what was approved as part of the site plan. So the front yard setback is 30 feet, side yard's 10 feet, rear yard's 10 feet. So what we did is we've used the wetlands as a de facto property line and established a setback off of that wetland, even though the wetland is on the property. So that way we kept a distance off of the wetlands. Even though the wetlands are on property, we kind of established wetlands. That is your property line, 10 foot off of that. So if you did have a accessory unit, a shed, and you go 5 foot, you still would not be encroaching the wetlands or anything else like that.
I will be quite honest, I have a little bit of heartburn about having the wetlands on the lots as part of the lots.
We understood. We went back and forth and talked about it and understanding that there's no HOA maintenance on those two lots, and trying not to burden the HOA with additional maintenance of ownership, everything else is kind of why we didn't include the wetlands, and we typically try not to do that, but in this case, we thought it was best for both situations. They're currently on lots now and didn't want to burden the HOA any further by having to obtain any additional lands.
But if you just left it as preserved land,
this has to be owned by somebody, it has to be insured and everything else. So in this case, it's better just to leave it as part of the 8 property owners should this receive approval.
Presently, it's just part of the two lots. It's part of lots 21 and 22.
I understand that. I went back and read all the minutes that were available for the last time there was a hearing on this, and I know there were several concerns about the environment. So I'm sure the other commissioners will have something to say on this as well, but I am concerned about having the wetlands in those lots. Answered my question, so that for what I had. Thank you.
What for my benefit, what is the downside when they're, I mean, this all kind of
what would be the downside to leave the wetlands in there? Or of having, for the...
Both ways. What there must be a principle or a reason. Is it because it's better if they don't,
if it's not their property, then nobody will ever be...
Encroaching.
They wouldn't be, we'll just go clear that area out so that the kids can go play back there. And, it wouldn't be their property to do that on, which if it is their property, there is that enticement that, we can go, nobody's gonna notice. We pull out the bushes back there, or we do it, take the tree down.
Limbs fall off the trees?
There's lots of rules in the world, Doug.
Well, I mean, in wetlands, isn't it pretty specific about what you can do to touch it?
Yes, but that's what I'm saying. That was just my concern. It's human nature. Right, if it were my backyard, I'd be like, well, I want to be able to use my backyard.
Wetlands are also protected by the Corps of Engineers, who would have jurisdiction on the wetlands. And we did do a wetland delineation by Environmental Resources Incorporated, so that's been updated within the past year. They will be deed restricted that there are wetlands on site, that they're not allowed to do certain things in the wetlands without getting a permit from the Corps of Engineers. With the wetlands on or off the property, you could probably make the same argument that where they're located, probably no one would know if you went back there and moved a little back. So in this case, I can see both sides of the argument, but we are going to, through deed restriction, notes on the plan, as Mr. Hutt mentioned, possibly sign it so that the homeowners know where that true limit of the property, buildable area of the property is, and the rest of the property is there for nature to do what nature is going to do.
Well, the reason I ask is because, I lived on way back in the woods. That's where I was raised, and we.
kind of
and I'm telling you, I mean, it's a huge expense just going through every year or every other year and taking everything that's fallen off the trees and, you know, bring them, you know, drag them out and put them in the chipper. And if you don't, I mean, for us, you know, if you don't do that, it's I see that area is unattractive. But are you not allowed to do that in a wetlands area?
You need a permit. There's nationwide permits that allow you to do cleanup in wetlands, but it's a permit you would have to file to clean out, whether it's on an individual homeowner or HOA. There's still a process to do that type of work in that area.
Mr. Robertson, I want to ask you, this may be more of a history question. We had, my memory serves me correctly, didn't we adopt a policy that we were not allowing wetlands to be within a lot?
Yeah, so
but my question for you is, that's the first one, the question is, was it a policy, is it an ordinance, do we have flexibility?
So it's not an ordinance, it's in the cluster on a certain track of the cluster about no lots within wetlands, but typically it's been a policy up to this point of not, you know, and I don't think it's been a hard and fast policy, because sometimes you can't avoid it if there's a pocket wetland that it might end up somewhere. But, you know, that's not a code requirement. Obviously, because this case, these two lots had wetlands in it. I would suffice to say, though, if this came in brand new, it'd be different. But,
right,
you know, we're taking care of lots that already
exist. That's kind of what I wanted to point out to the commission, that we typically do not allow the wetlands in within the lot lines, and there were a lot of good reasons for why we took that position. However, about once every 10 years you get a situation where it's actually better, because once again, to serve the public ultimately better served with this plan, because the homeowners association is not going to be burdened with the having to take care of it. The homeowners are not going to have to endure strangers coming on their property to take care of it. So I think this is the rare exception. It's rare, but I'm okay. I'm all right with this, I think.
Okay.
But
it's shocking that Mr. Wheatley and I would disagree on something.
Well, not really, but no, I get where you're coming from. And as Mr. Robertson said, if this were coming in as a brand new application, that would be a no. No, absolutely not. But like I said, once in a while we get one where it does make some sense, I think. But I'm only one of five. You might have.
And I would add just to that, you know, I think one thing to take into consideration is this is the rare occasion where the Homeowners Association apparently agrees with it, which, you know, is unusual. And it seems as though they have agreed with it, stating also that they don't want to be the ones that are
saddled
with it.
They don't want to take care of it. I don't blame them. I wouldn't either.
How much taken care of it is there?
Well, it generally
takes care of itself, but you do have to insure it.
Yeah.
And there's still a chance that the tree from the wetlands falls on a house or something. There's all these weird things
really,
that happen, the hurricane, the tornado, something can happen.
It's really more the insurance and so on than it is the actual maintenance of it.
And keeping people out of there, you know, and whatever. So, yeah.
Because the community owns it, the community owns it, the residents feel like they have the right of use, you know.
And other people.
You know, it's very rare that I would agree with something like this, I will assure you. I'm not an advocate. I was very strongly for not having wetlands and lot lines way back when we did it, and everybody got all upset, but they got over it, and everybody found a way to deal with it. And this is definitely not the opening of a box here, in my mind. This is very. This is just an unusual case.
Kind of seems to make sense to me.
Okay. Anyone else have any?
Just in this circumstance.
And quite honestly, folks, we're getting a wee bit ahead of ourselves, because this is really decisions and things
right.
We should be discussing after.
That's true. That's true. We hear.
Let's go ahead and get finished up. Anyone else? I forget where we are in the lineup of questions.
Keller.
Okay, Keller. Yeah.
I'd just like to talk about the wetlands for a little bit. No questions.
All right, Ms. Wingate.
My questions have been answered.
Okay, counsel.
No, I don't have any questions. They're all answered.
Cornwell.
I would just note there is another letter in support of the application in the file, and it's from Mr. Tom Balling that he's in support of the application as well.
Okay. Is he a resident of
Canal? He is a resident of Canal Corcoran.
Okay. All right, then. Ms. Bukovich?
None, thank you.
Okay, Ms. Walls?
None, thank you.
All right, gentlemen, if you'll take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of change of zone number 1852, Canal Corcoran, LLC? Yes, sir. Come on up.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Jason Abella. I am the current president of the board of directors for the Canal Corcoran Homeowners Association. I reside at 3 Wades Court, and I'm here to speak in support of the proposal that's been brought before you. The proposal will have a negligible effect on the neighborhood. We've already got about 15 undeveloped lots, so it's not like we're going to have a whole bunch of new construction that, you know, that we wouldn't otherwise have. I would note, you mentioned accessory buildings. They're generally not allowed through our covenants, and that was one of the reasons why the homeowners supported this so overwhelmingly by a 65% affirmative vote, is that we're going to gain control, and it's really maintaining the status quo. There was some concern that you could have a large, like North Carolina style mini hotel, that would be a heavy rental, and so the Homeowners Association is very much in favor of this proposal. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak in favor? Is there anyone who would like to speak in opposition to conditional use number 1852? Yes, sir.
Ed Haggerty from the Grand at Canal Point, from Canal Point.
Okay.
So I can't really say that I'm quote unquote opposed to this. I just have some questions, and you guys are concerned about the wetlands. And there's one picture, if you bring it up, that has there's a stream runs right behind this. So the first question is, if you see the pond to the left, that's fed by a stream that comes off of the canal. It's not a it's not a runoff pond. So the question is that stream just gonna, they can't touch it? And the reason I'm here on behalf of a couple of myself and a couple of our neighbors, and we're right on that curve. So I'm trying to figure out just how close the back of the property that they want to build is going to be to our homes. And if they, and I'm looking at this, I got these lot plans. I got lot A, B, C, and D, which abut right up to the wetlands.
Right.
So if they can't go past that, if those buildings aren't going past that stream, then it would be okay. But then are there going to be applications for decks and pools and things like that that extend those backyards? That's yeah, really the concern of myself and my neighbors. Plus, again, it's noise, but I have an advantage in that I can just turn my hearing aids off. I'm not too worried about that.
That is an elegant solution.
Right. I have 8 grandkids, so if there's noise at night, I'll just wake them up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we'll counterattack. So anyway, that's really just a question. It's just how far away is it going to be, and are decks and pools going to go back there, and is that stream going to be left alone?
So the stream will be left alone. The lots actually right now go up to that boundary. So really, in terms of where somebody could build, that's not really changing much between what's approved right now and what they're asking for. However, there are wetlands lines, which are non-disturbance areas, so that's not going to change, which means that stream is not going to be built on. And from what their engineer stated, the setbacks actually use that wetland line, so there's a separation of at least 10 feet from the wetlands to where that house would be. And they could put accessory structures as close as 5 feet, but it sounds like they have a prohibition against accessory structures, so you don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, that's all. I just wanted to make that comment, so I won't be running around with my jungle boots back there, I guess. So.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
The grandkid counterattack. I like that.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition? Okay, does anyone on the commission have any questions? Any further questions?
Nope.
Good, thank you, sir.
All right, then. There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the meeting to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. And Mr. Lingo, I sure hope you're not being charged by the page here. All right. Okay. Completes our